Welcome to the Marshall Pruitt Podcast, presented by Cooper Tires. My guests this time are IndyCar's four new team owners. That would be Trevor Carlin, owner of the Carlin Racing Team, graduating from Indy Lights. That would be Mike Harding, a first-time IndyCar team owner, who started last year at the Indy 500, did two additional races. This is his first full-time campaign coming up. We also have Ricardo Juncos, whose Mazda Road Indy team has been excelling for years, produced a number of champions, including Kyle Kaiser, who will graduate with the team this year from Indy Lights into a partial IndyCar campaign. And finally, Mike Shank, who has been an IndyCar driver, longtime sports car entrant, made his Indy 500 debut last year in a co-entry with Andretti Autosport, went out and bought his own chassis, and he's going to be doing at least six races this year with Jack Harvey, and is looking to expand into the Verizon IndyCar Series full-time as soon as possible. So I got all four of them together at the Phoenix Open Test with Phoenix's ongoing modernization program. Don't really have a good place that's nice and quiet and soundproof. Their radio room, quite loud, and with that being occupied, actually gave us a tent in the infield with some fairly loud fans going and some cars warming up engines. So done my best to clean up or at least bring down the ambient noise. Far from a perfect environment, but regardless, the four men here, four new team owners, thought it'd be fascinating to get them together, talk about what has brought them into IndyCar, what led to those decisions, some of the challenges they've faced, some of the costs involved, some of the revelations in working with the series to get here. So anyways, it's the first time we've had this many team owners coming in all at once in I don't know how long. And all four of them, incredibly unique, very different backgrounds, some commonalities too. We find out that Carlin and Shank have a lot in common. That was a fun part of the conversation. So figure these are four that I'm hoping we're going to hear a ton more from in the future as they all expand to full-time programs. And what better opportunity than to sit in with them at the start of 2018 so we can track their progress as they move forward through the end of the decade. You know, you can get every episode of the Marshall Pruitt Podcast presented by Cooper Tires on iTunes, on Podbean, on our Marshall Pruitt Podcast Facebook page, and we're also working to drop the podcast in a few other outlets to make it even easier for you to access. All right, off we go with IndyCar's four new team owners.
Gentlemen, I'm so glad we can sit down and talk because that means we have four new team owners in IndyCar, where folks like myself who've covered this sport for a good long time, we've been talking for years. What do we need to do to get good folks like yourself here? Trevor Carlin, Mike Harding, Ricardo Juncos, Mike Shank. Let me start off with maybe a little bit of a softball, but I'm genuinely interested to learn. What was the trigger or the mechanism for you guys to say, the time is right, I want to go now? I mean, let's start with you, Trevor. I mean, and you obviously well established in Europe with your open wheel programs, came here, Indy Lights, championship winning team now. What was the mechanism for you that said the top step, I'm ready for that?
Well, I think it's probably the same with all the guys. It's just a set of circumstances. I think we all want to win and do well, so you always target the pinnacle of your sport, which IndyCar is. We came over here to the States, started with Indy Lights, and our goal was IndyCar, but it's not the sort of thing you can just walk into when you're fresh off the boat from the UK. So we did our time in Lights, we won the championship with Ed, and we thought we were ready at the end of year two, but in the end I couldn't raise the funding, didn't seem to make sense to buy cars with the old aero kit and make that investment. So we decided to wait, and then just a combination of Ganassi dropping down to two cars, two of his drivers being my drivers, and they both had budgets, it all sort of clicked. Everything I've ever done has been that way. The timing was right, the car's great. It's good to have some new teams in it as well, because we can have our own internal battles, which would be nice.
I didn't realize we have the three Chevy guys across the table from the Honda guys, so I'll help you out if we get into a little scrum here.
I think the engines are the least of our issues at the moment. As long as they work, that's all we care about. So it was just timing and a desire to do it. It's going to be difficult. We still don't have enough funding. But we're going to work hard and do our best. And fingers crossed, we won't screw up too bad.
How about you, Mike? I mean, we've known of you for a while. You've been, I mean, Indy 500, Indianapolis, it's your core. What was the thing for you that said, all right, I'm tired of going to this race and watching it. I want to be in here in the ground floor.
Well, I grew up with the 500 and I love the 500. And I've been a part of it for 17 years. I have the largest carb day party out there. We own a family construction company since 1960. I hooked up with Larry Curry somehow, and he came to work for me running my transportation division. So the 100th running was coming up, and I could see Larry walking around depressed and stuff. So I said, if you get the opportunity to get something going for the 500, take it. Take as much time off you want. I'll pay you. Don't worry about it. He did, and with a really quality team. So they had a bad experience, and we're sitting in my suite at the end of the race. He starts crying. He's an emotional guy. And started talking, and one thing led to another, and here we are.
Wow.
So
that's pretty amazing.
Yeah. So Larry, it's all Larry's fault.
Yeah. Blame Curry.
Yeah.
Ricardo, I mean, you got this guy from the Midwest, Indy 500, big part of their culture. You had to make a little bit of a long trip to bring this this dream to reality. Your story in and of itself is amazing on its own, but tell me about a kid coming from South America to the United States, starting an open wheel team. Where did your success with Juncos Racing on the road to Indy come to a point where you said, IndyCar is right for me?
I don't think it was my jump to IndyCar was because it was the proper time. I think it was a consequence of the development that we keep going, kind of what Trevi was saying. I think it's the proper time. I agree 100%, I think, with the new car, and I really agree what IndyCar is doing, and happens to be the our time at the same, because it was something that was not planned for me. So I ran out of option, right, 15 years ago, and I came here for 2 weeks with nothing on it. But we have this development system in the team, which I created back in go-kart time with Spencer Pigot, for example, and we developed that to the point that today we have Kyle Kaiser after 4 years with us winning, and that's, I think, what I like the most. And it's just a consequence, and everything happened for a reason, I think. And it's not like I plan, okay, this is perfect timing, let's do it. A lot of things happened for me to do it at the right time, at the right moment. Flew to Argentina for different things, find people that can help, and without knowing what, how, or when. And then KV situation happened to be an opportunity, so we make it happen. And we entered the last year, the 500, knowing that, you know, all body work and stuff, so I was a decision maker. But if I didn't do it that time, we probably couldn't do it anymore, because the opportunity to buy that team where everything was established already and running with, you know, all the equipment and cars and, you know, timing stand, takes forever to build something from ground zero. Unless it's an opportunity that happened with him, for example, with Chip Ganassi, and for Travis to jump in, that was a good opportunity. It's hard, like I can see Michael facing now. So I was able to get this team running, did the 500, and see what happened after. And here we are. We was able to win the Indy Lights Championship. That was the key. If we wouldn't won that championship, today we probably trying to do the 500 again and nothing else. So everything is happening, who knows why, and I just keep working, keep learning, and enjoying, of course, because I love racing so much. And, you know, today I have my first team owners meeting, and be sitting on that table with all these names like I was following when I was young, it was amazing. It was something that I still processing, right?
So Shank, I can accuse you of many things. Persistence is one of them, because this should be your seventh or eighth year as an IndyCar team owner. You bought a chassis when the new chassis came out in 2012.
Yep.
This chronicle of you getting dicked around, not being able to get a proper engine, you ended up selling that chassis. you're back, man. You're that dog chasing the meat truck. Is that just part of your personality? And was there something financially that, you know, the timing made 2018 work for you?
I'm like Mr. Harding here. I grew up in Columbus, Ohio, 3 hours from Indianapolis. So I grew up every May getting the Indianapolis Star brought to me in Columbus, you know, in mail. I listened to the radio with my dad all the month. I mean, for me, it's always been about the Indy 500. I've made no bones about that. The way I got there is different. You know, I spent a lot of time in the up-and-coming ladder series. From the 2000, spent 10 years in Toyota Atlantic with a big team. But then I had to deviate in 2004 and go sports car racing. Thank God I did. It changed my life at the time.
Yeah.
And so my route to here is totally different than these guys. I mean, I was definitely kind of where Yunkos was. But then I had, because of time and things, because you know, this is all I do for a living. So I have to make money. I can't lose money. So we followed a route that turned out to be really good. It allowed for opportunities like this. We made a run at it in 2012. It was really disappointing. The people that were running the series then just didn't really care, I felt. Or maybe that's not a good word, probably. I just didn't put any attention into it.
I don't
I know they cared.
They cared, but I don't think the previous management structure was as invested in its team owners and paddock like what I see today. Is that fair? Yeah,
Jay Fry and Mark Sibler are just night and day different than what I experienced. So on the admin side, it's just great. We did the 500 with Andretti's and Jack this year. It was a good experience. Opportunity came after that with a series and AutoNation. So really it was just, can we do this without losing money? That was the biggest thing. We have the sports car program, which is really strong with Acura right now. But can we do this and not hurt the sports car program and add to what we kind of do? And timing was right. Opportunity. It was absolutely the time for us to try it again. Now, we're not coming in full-time like these guys are yet, but we'll be there soon.
Trevor, I don't know if I would say this move to IndyCar. I'm assuming of the four of you, this might have been easiest for you. Not saying it was easy, but I don't think there's an open wheel championship in the world that doesn't have a frickin' Carlin Racing entry somewhere. You've done this for so long. How hard was building up to IndyCar, or has your previous infrastructure helped ease that in some way?
Well, at the end of the day, I mean, it's I only lead the team. I've got a fantastic bunch of guys. Colin Hale leads up the IndyCar team. We've had a pretty long history of setting up new teams going into new championships, be it World Series by Renault, GP3, GP2, Indy Lights. So it's a process we've done before. We always do it very economically. We don't turn up with a full checkbook and just buy all new stuff. We're very smart about how we do it. So I suppose it's a process we're used to. Obviously, this process is far more complicated. Because the car is far more expensive, you've got to deal with so many different suppliers. It's far more sophisticated. So it's, and I've got a team of 26, 27 guys all of a sudden to run two cars. Mm. So it's by far the biggest team we've ever had and ever run. So that's a headache. But you know, so far it's going quite smoothly. The next battle is to try and get some performance. So.
That's right.
Osvaldo. Well, yeah,
he was in the 14 years, but drove for him.
Yeah, he drove for us in 1991. We built our own Formula 3 car with my uncle Steve at Bowman, and Ozzy was our driver.
I remember that.
And he was an absolute legendary driver. It's fantastic. And he hasn't changed. I mean, he's just a hero. And that's how I heard of Mike.
Yeah.
When I heard Osvaldo was driving, and didn't Felipe Nasr? He drove for you as well.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
Whoever your drivers are, there's probably a Carlin entry somewhere.
That's
at some point.
I'm Jack.
No, you're deeper than I am.
Yeah. So it's a process we've done before, but this is by far the biggest challenge we've ever taken on.
How about for you, Mike? Because knowing that you have had and continue to have a very successful business outside of racing, what has the process been like for you? You've hired great people. You've got Brian Barnhart, Larry Curry, etc. How much of this process has been hands-on for you, wanting to make sure this business succeeds? How much of has it been being a little bit hands-off, and is that comfortable at all if you do stand back?
Well, I'm trying to be hands-on, but No, I don't have an inkling of the experience that these guys got and the knowledge. So Larry's great, but for me to succeed in this, I need a Mike Hall. And Brian Barnhart, to me, is the closest thing to a Mike Hall. So I'm really trying to be a sponge off him and Larry. So really, I'm not that hands-on. I'm just in the learning mode. So it's kind of hard, but you know, I think it'll all pan out in the long run.
How about you, Ricardo? You continue to have, like Trevor, have your Mazda Road to Indy program. Luckily, you built a beautiful new shop recently, so you had at least space to expand, but are there any people left to hire? I mean, you just mentioned you met some of your own mechanics that you hired for the first time here. Tell me about the expansion efforts. How much time has this taken?
It's a lot. It's difficult because I always have in my mind that we gotta do this without hurting the other two series. And one of the biggest challenges is always people. And it's always a group of people that make something happen. So the most important thing for me is my guys and how they're gonna work, who's gonna do what. And I'm there all the time because I have a lot of experience as well, and I use that. And everything I learned here obviously was massive. But we are a total of 32 full-time guys now. Between the three series. I have 6 full-time guys for Pro Mazda, 6 in Indy Lights, and that's probably more than the standards,
yeah.
But that's the way I see things the right way. Obviously, it's hard on the business side because the overhead is huge, but we always compete for championships, so I think that's what attracts drivers to us. But the biggest challenge now is to make the same thing in IndyCar, which is no. The error in IndyCar can be a big price.
Mm.
So if you made a mistake in Pro Mazda, business-wise, technical-wise, the consequence it is here can be catastrophic.
Huge.
So it's very difficult. I have to make sure I choose the right people, and whoever they are, I gotta make it work. So that's where I put everything I learned on the even psychological things to make sure these people are good and join and work good as a group. On the business side, it's tricky because I can never let the other series without attention. So I think I found a good formula now. And I'm learning, obviously, since the 500, all this new way, which is the leading with sponsor, which we don't have yet, but try to have it. Now IndyCar is nothing. A father, as much as rich as they can be, cannot pay for this. So this is something that I never did before. So I gotta learn and I gotta better hurry up because, yeah, that's my biggest challenge now. How can I make it work on the business side?
You got to sign up on racingsponsors.com and then they just send you all kinds of money. It's great. Mike, I think the way you went about structuring your IndyCar team is incredibly unique because your full-time base, as you mentioned, is your IMSA sports car program. But when you were going about hiring folks for that, your chief mechanics and otherwise, recently, you knew that this IndyCar thing was coming, so you didn't just hire sports car specialists to try and drag over to IndyCar. You know, you hired Dario Franchitti's championship Indy 500 winning chief mechanic to be on your sports cars to also do double duty. So tell us about that mindset, because I think it's pretty interesting. You've got these guys, they might forget what series they're in from weekend to weekend, but you've got some universal players.
The thing that I recognized right away when we first started in sports cars, we run the sports car like we ran our Toyota open wheel car, or the way they run Indy cars. So structurally, internally, we run our sports car program just like an Indy car. So what do I mean by that? I mean the setups, the set downs, the way we communicate in engineering, the electronic side of things. Everything is just like an IndyCar. So I typically hire guys that have come off of IndyCar anyways.
Mm.
A lot of guys get burnt out on the schedule, and so they decide to take a break or they want to do spot labor, they want to fly in. So I just tried to pick the best group of those people that maybe needed a little break, and I can offer them kind of a little different view for a while. Eventually we'll be full-time in this and we'll have to deal with that when we do. But the idea was to get the most experienced guys that I didn't feel like were recycled around the pits here.
Yeah.
Okay, because everyone walks around with their box. And so stable guys that maybe need a little bit of a change in their life. They didn't want to be on the road 25 weekends.
So you baited them into sports car, then brought them back.
That's exactly what I did.
Right,
that's exactly what I did.
We figured you out here, pal.
The old coconut.
Yeah,
where's that? So anyway.
the financial side of IndyCar is something that we hear frequently, whether it's Chip Ganassi spending last season with Scott Dixon's car lightly funded, or at least in terms of sponsors on the car. Roger Penske has been forthright in saying that some of his cars have been on the grid because he's a successful businessman, not because corporate America is raining money in. I want to ask you guys to talk dollars and cents, but what has this been like, say, in your end, Trevor, knowing that you obviously have been fortunate to have some good commercial backing, drivers who have some good sponsors? That doesn't mean money's raining from the sky and you can just buy everything you want. What have the challenges been from your side in trying to put the entire financial puzzle together so you could be here?
Well, I mean, we're from a business model where we've had to normally get drivers and their sponsors to pay for the seats. So everything in Europe has been self-funded. This program is working the same way. So I've got running budget. What I haven't had is the startup cost money. So I've had to fund that internally by hook or by crook, and wheeling and dealing, and using, you know, some of our resources from Europe. But we've got enough money to run. I've just had a beg, steal and borrow to get the thing set up. But we've done a good job. We'll probably drop back to two Indy Lights cars, so we had some excess Indy Lights kit. We've invested in two new trucks. Because we want to be in this for the long term. So it's difficult financially, but we're also taking on a very highly regarded sports marketing company who's going to start developing a program for us, hopefully to find us money for next year. So yeah, we all know, all around this table know, that the more money you've got, the more you can spend on the cars, the faster you can go. So yeah, we've just got to find more cash to help us move up the grid as quickly as possible.
So Mike, I know, I should say no, I assume that despite that beautiful heart, large hearting on the side pod, I'm guessing you would love that to be someone from corporate America. I'm not saying we want your name to come off the car, but what have the challenges been like for you in trying to get sponsors to look at your program and consider investing?
Well, we put together a really good marketing team. We have enough funding for one car for this year, but the sponsorship, I never dreamed it would be this hard.
Really?
Yeah, it's a nightmare, but I want to sign up for that.
RacingSponsorship.com?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, me too.
So let's get that going. But it is hard, but we're working at it every day, and you know, we're trying to build our model up, so hopefully we'll be there someday.
Put Gabby to work too as well. The kid can't just drive the car. He's got to do a little more than that.
That's what I'm saying.
Ricardo, you, as you mentioned, being able to win the $1 million from Mazda with the Mazda Road to Indy with Kyle Kaiser's championship, that was a big help for you. That's been a help for a lot of drivers. Ed Jones coming in with Dale Coyne, obviously. $1 million helped a lot. Tell me a little bit about maybe working with the series, talking about things like leader circles, or I'm not talking about handouts from the series, but has IndyCar treated you, and I'm hopefully the rest of you, like some form of investment that if they do try and help you, even if their marketing folks can be some sort of support, that they'll get something back?
I mean, yes. I mean, I don't have words to express, to be honest, how good they are with me, like Jay Fry, Mark Mice, everybody in IndyCar. I mean, they are amazing. I can see the support. They actually did big things last year for us, and that's the best I can see. And I think the situation that everybody's facing, I mean, if Chip Ganassi is facing that, never mind us.
Roger.
But
Roger, I think they'll lend you their private jets whenever you need them, by the way. Very
but
generous.
I think it's a cycle.
Cycle.
And I think we gotta go up, and I really believe that, and I obviously trust in this, and I like all the ideas, and eventually it's gonna be easy, but it's gonna be easier, I think, for the future, short future, maybe to start getting more interest and investment from companies. I have a good feeling after the 500. Nothing materialized now yet for me, but it's difficult, it takes time. So same than then, we have our own internal marketing guys and a strategy, and I'm, like I said, I'm trying to learn as much as possible and coming with our own ideas how we're gonna get it. We're talking over 30 companies today, and all of them kind of interested. I don't have no $1 yet, but I have faith and I believe will happen soon, even if it's in a small portions, but yeah. I think we need to be patient and working, because I think, like I said before, this is the right time, but again, never is easy, right? But that's pretty much the way I see it. But IndyCar has been huge help for us, and I really like them, and I think I don't see how they can do things, to be honest, but I agree with everything that's happening, even when they face the problems we have and they explain to you the issues, and I say, okay, makes sense, and I understand now, and it's a fluent communication, it's easy to talk with everybody, and that's, I never experienced that before, so I'm really, really happy with them.
We're going to have to give folks a moment, because I think a lot of IndyCar fans are picking themselves up off the ground, because they've never heard that before. That, but kidding aside, that has been the theme, that, you know, no, we're not claiming everything's perfect, but for the first time in a long time, you can see IndyCar's leadership hitting the bullseye a lot more than missing the whole dang thing.
It's no bullshit. I mean, if four of us are sitting here, it's probably a part of that. It's proof of that, I guess.
Exactly.
You had me pissing my pants laughing, and I realized I was kind of laughing at your misery, talking about the revelation of what two sets of shocks cost for your IndyCar, Mike.
Yeah, so...
Could you tell us that story? And I'm not asking you to be angry, but it was a revelation for you, having seen the opposite side. Could you share that with us?
Well, we were in the owner's meeting this morning, and we're just listening. You know, a lot of experience in the room this morning, but what they don't realize is, for teams like us coming into this thing, we want to come in and we want to feel like we can contribute and be competitive. We don't want to feel like we can run 18th to 24th every freaking weekend. The way the rules are right now, it's very difficult to come in. I mean, you can hire all the people in the world you want, right? And have great people there, but there's still something to be said about the machine that has run for 7 years or 8 years with this chassis. So all their inerter programs, all their damper programs, all this stuff that does nothing for the show, zero value. You have to be a part of that. You have to buy into that in some level. So I spent a couple hundred grand right away. And that just scratches the surface. That doesn't include the shaker time and development and the new bits we got to build. And it's just out of control. There's all kinds of arguments. And everyone has a stance on this. The guys that have been here forever are invested, and now we are. So thank God. The only saving grace is this is a, I guess, 3-year deal now. I mean, that we get to use this stuff. So, but to me, and I hate to say this because I love ingenuity, and you and I have debated this before, but if you want people to come in and be able to compete, you got to lock more things down. So I was saying to Chip in the meeting, when I came in to on a prototype with Chip that same year, I could compete with him and finished on the podium with him the very first race with Oswaldo with my 400 grand back then. That's all I had. I was running off. And it's because of rule stability and not having the ability to go out and spend. But
so you just spent half of your season's from a DP budget
just
on two sets of shocks.
That's true. And all the tooling, now to be fair, it's the dampers, it's the extra bits, it's the option stuff that they all want to have, and you know, it's all those things. I don't know, it just seems pointless to me. You know, the open areas that they've opened up, I understand that Dallara didn't deliver a price that they liked and they wanted to be able to go after. Well, when you buy a car for $389, I think it is, or something like that. And then I've got a stack of invoices this tall from 15 different companies to build one race car. Compared to, say, when I had my Ligiers or something like that in prototype racing, where I got a kit. And that kit could go to Le Mans, and I qualified fourth. My first year at Le Mans, I qualified fourth. And I led the race. First time. I mean, that's a statement that I'm trying to say here.
Yeah.
Well, I just want hope to be able to finish in the top 10, finish in the top 5 when it's right, you know? And the way it is now, it's really difficult. Didn't dissuade us all. We're all here. We're all doing it. We all paid the price. It just, if they want to think about the guys that you race with in the series, you know, all the Formula 2000, there's teams there that could do this, right? But they have to feel like they compete. Can't compete.
This is an invaluable voice, though. Because you have folks, as you said, who've been invested in this car, in this technology for many years, having enough new team owners to be able to say, hey, we love being here, we're happy we're here, but here's at least some of the stuff we're seeing for the first time that maybe you would think about, so that if we come back next year,
there's two or three or four more.
If that's what they want. If they want new blood, they've got to do that. So we'll see.
Last question for you guys. So sitting in the owners meeting, Trev, you're seeing, you know, these captains of industry, Roger Penske on down to Dale Coyne, who's a lifer. Where do you see Carlin Racing fitting into this paddock? And what is an acceptable first year for you?
Well, I mean, I can't really set any performance targets. You know, we just want to be here and be respectable and learn our trade like we do in everything else we do. It's impossible to say where we'll be on track. What we'd like to be seen as is a team that contributes to the series, does a professional job, has a good image, is welcoming to the fans. That's what we like about, that's why we're here in the States, is because we can mix with the fans instead of being stuck away in a Formula One paddock. We're actually here with the people, and we like that. You know, we're racers. We want to mix with people that like coming to watch races. So we want to be part of it. We want to be respected. And in maybe 2 or 3 years' time, I'll actually say something in one of the team owners' meetings. It takes me a while to build
Screw
up.
Screw you, Roger.
Now, if I go in a Formula 3 team managers' meeting, then I'm the one that talks all the shit.
Here comes Carlin again.
But now I have to earn my stripes and sit there and be quiet and listen, because no one's forced us to do this. Yeah. We've got to come and play by their rules. But I completely agree with Mike. When I've just bought two Formula 2 cars, and I've taken delivery of one, you get the car, you get every piece of that car.
Yeah.
You collect the engine on a different day, you get the engine with every piece. And on Wednesday, all the teams will run one car as an official shakedown to make sure to get all the bugs and everything out of it. And we got every nut, bolt, washer from one supplier. Everything. Build the car, get it painted, make it look nice. Simple.
The old guard here doesn't want to hear about that. And, you know, that's fine. I mean, they have, you know, they have the experience. So who are he and I to say that that's the right thing to do?
But they're costing themselves money. They're wasting money. Yeah. And it's the same. It's the same with Formula One to a ridiculous level. Yeah. And it's not in their interests to change the rules to suit new people.
Right.
They want to protect their vested interests, and that's fair enough.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, it's cool.
We are the new kids.
We've got to earn our stripes. Take them on and say one day we'll be the gnarly old gets in the corner trying to block the kids, you know. So
do you agree with that, Mike? Because I would maybe, if I was a team owner, granted, you most of you guys know I'm a complete ass, so I have no issues making an ass out of myself.
Yeah,
but
that.
Yes,
think
that we've that's been declared. Do you agree with that, Mike, or do you come from a mindset that I might have of, hey, congratulations on all your championship in history, but my name's on the interest just like yours. I'm paying the bills just like you do. My voice, whether it's new or not, should be just as equal as yours.
I mean, I emulate everything he said, Trevor said. So, you know, is it going to be hard to compete with the Ganassis, Penske's, and Andretti's? Of course, you know, but over time, hopefully we can. So, you know.
That's the goal.
Yeah.
How about you, Ricardo? You, like Mike, Michael Shank, you've been a voice of reason for many years. I know you said that it was, you know, almost that childlike thing, like, whoa, I've been watching these guys forever and I get to sit among them, be a part of them. What's an acceptable year for you? I realize you've got a partial schedule, two different drivers, but what are you hoping to close 2018 out with and feel positive about as a new IndyCar team owner?
Yeah, I kind of agree with Travis as well. I mean, for us, like I said today early, like it was already a dream now that I'd be sitting in that table with those names, and I respect them all. And I think IndyCar is huge. I put IndyCar as same level as Formula One, if you ask me. Indy 500 is even older. But, and we choose this high level of racing, and obviously it's gonna be difficult for us, but I'm just gonna enjoy, you know, try our best to represent, like he said, the team image today is important, but enjoy. We're doing something that, you know, we're lucky to.
We're not curing
to
cancer.
Make a living for when you make a living for something you love, what else you can ask in life? we're doing all this, right? So I'm gonna enjoy it, but I always succeed. I'm a very competitive person. So as much as I respect Roger, Andretti, everybody, but one day, I don't know when, hopefully we can win, we can beat them. But that's not the goal. The goal is just to be there, do something the best we can, and the result we'll see, you know?
You've got to tell me whenever the owner's meeting happens where Ricardo stands up and says, I'm coming for you, Ganassi. That's when we know he's in a good place.
All right, I'll do it.
All right, Mike, we'll close with you. This might be an obvious closing question, but so you're coming in now, having made your Indy 500 debut last year, but you're coming in now, Jack Harvey, six races. You've got some really cool sponsors.
Who also drove for Trevor also.
I hope you're getting some sort of percentage.
I think he won the championship with you guys.
Did.
Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
You've got a couple of great sponsors signed up at the six race level for your debut season.
Really proud of that.
Is transitioning that into 8-10 full season, is that the measurement of success? If you're to look back at 2018 and say, cool, they've invested in us, we want to do more? Or is there another metric that would have you say, all right, jumping off the deep end in IndyCar, this was worthwhile?
No, I would trade six top fives for eight races total. I want quality, not quantity. We're totally geared up for six races, and we're going to focus as hard as we can on six. If by chance that we work our networking and our stuff, then we come up with more to do more, we would. But the emphasis is absolute performance over you know, trying to, you know, wiggle diggle out maybe Road America or something we don't have on our schedule right now. We don't need to do that. I'm focused on trying to get some results quickly.
You guys rock. Thank you so much for sitting down.
And that was Trevor Carlin, Mike Harding, Ricardo Juncos, and Mike Schenck. A lively group for the most part. Ricardo, I just love the guy. His life story is amazing. That is something that I'm absolutely going to capture in podcast form. Mike and I have always gotten along well, done a lot of podcast stuff so far. Trevor, another true gem that I'm hoping to have his voice included in more of what we do here. And also Mike Harding, who I think is just, you know, coming into this world, not used to the spotlight. I think this sit-down was the second ever interview he'd done, like, you know, proper interview. So hopefully Mike will perk up a little bit more and share more of his voice, more of his thoughts and opinions, just like all the other team owners do. All right, I'm Marshall Pruitt. This is a Marshall Pruitt podcast presented by Cooper Tires. Thank you for listening.